Around Comics, Episode 82. Ooh.
Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by the co-host of the show, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello once again.
And Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah,
jeez, Tom, you okay?
No, I'm tired.
It's been hard on you this month.
Tax season.
Tax season's tough.
But hey, listen, I have a job. There's a lot of people out there that don't have jobs.
This is true. So
I'm not going to whine
too
much.
Yeah, be happy for that. Yeah. Well, you have arms too. There's a lot of people out there that don't have arms, and you know, so don't feel so bad.
I felt bad until I walked and I saw the two guys that worked that intersection, like for money. Like one guy asked for money from people coming one way, and one guy asked for money coming the other way. And I thought, you know, I don't have it so bad.
The guy out there
they're working longer
the guy
hours
out there
than me.
Today had an attitude. I saw him like looking at people, going like,
"What the?
He's like giving
what
these
up?
Gestures, like, what the fuck? Where's my money?"
I am homeless.
Well, they work long hours, too.
I got
being homeless is a 24-hour day job.
I got hit up at a drive-thru by a homeless guy. I was at a Portillo's.
Industrious.
And, yeah, the dude comes up with his kid on his shoulders.
Oh, no.
I gave him money. I'm like, yeah, okay. If I can't, you know, I'm stuck in a drive-thru.
You felt the old drive-thru
kid scam.
I
was drive-thru
homeless.
They
used to wait at the Burger King on Irving, like, ready to, like, spring out on you. Because there was, like,
in
this
the bushes.
Little nook they could hide back in. And they'd wait and, like, peek. And as soon as you got your food, they knew you might stop at the trash can to, like, throw some stuff in there. And this guy would just appear. And
no, this was before... I'm in. I placed my order, and then like the next guy up,
you got your,
walks
you got
up.
Your money out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was just like drive-through begging. It was strange.
All
but.
Right,
nice.
All
right, okay,
well,
enough
well,
of that.
Let's introduce our guest. He is the president of Devil's Due Publishing, Mr.
Hello.
Josh Blaylock.
Hello, world.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming by on a Friday night. You took the long drive all the way from DDP.
Yeah, I know. It's, probably should have walked, but I'm a comic book creator and lazy, so drove on over the four blocks.
Well, this is one of our Comics 101 episodes.
I'd like to make any apologies for anything that's happened while other Devil's Due people have been here before.
Seeley was fairly well-behaved.
He stepped on my foot.
We never had to edit so much because of his... Some would say crazy views on politics in this country.
You know, he kicked me in the nuts.
And you know, Crank saved us last week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
oh,
we had some major technical difficulties.
I forgot my power cord for my laptop, I couldn't record.
Can't turn on the recording device, that's major. So we called up Crank, and he was like, yeah, come on over.
We have beer.
Yeah, that was it.
Mm-hmm. We have beer, and he's like,
we,
all right,
he did have
over.
To put pants on, so it was an inconvenience.
We had to meet him halfway.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, well, you know, Crank, this isn't going to be a big inconvenience. I mean, we're bringing, like, five people over to your house. He's like, well, I do have to put pants on.
That's
very
great.
I wish you would have put a shirt on.
Well, we will be talking about...
Those are nipple rings. He wants to show them off.
This week we're talking about how to create comics all the way from concept to comic shops. We're going to get to that in just a moment, but first I want to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by Borders.
Your heart pounds, your palms sweat, the tension is nearly unbearable. And then you spot it, the graphic novel you've been searching for everywhere, right here in your local Borders. Borders has thousands of manga and graphic novels. In fact, you'll find exactly what you're looking for and discover unexpected new authors and series simply by visiting Borders. Save on your favorite graphic novels, manga, and more. Click on the Borders banner on Around Comics for a 20% off coupon. Check Borders first. Find a store near you at www.borderstores.com or use the Borders store locator at aroundcomics.com.
Absolutely. Thank you to the fine folks at Borders. Thank you to the fine folks at Dark Tower. Would that be Mark?
Fine folk.
Folk. Fine folk.
I don't know if he's really a folk, though. I don't know what he is.
He's a Cub fan. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. While you're here, remember to ask about Dark Tower's Pull West membership. It's one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, independent comics, and trades, as well as statues and action figures.
And Rocketeer helmet that Mark just got in.
I think we should call it fit my fat head. I think we should call Mark Cousin Marky and make him more lovable.
That was actually mine. I wear that when I drive.
It's pretty nice. It's a sweet helmet.
You have a stand for my helmet?
Chris had it on earlier today.
Yeah, we'll have to get pictures of me and Tom in it.
Wouldn't fit.
Well, anyway, come into Dark Tower Comics for all of your comics and Rocketeer helmet needs.
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this episode is another installment of our Comics 101 series. It's our chance to both learn for ourselves and help educate others on different aspects of the comics world. This week, we're looking at the process of creating comics, from the beginning concept to writing, editorial, art, printing, marketing, and finally distribution. Here in Chicago, we are lucky to be the home of one of the success stories in independent comic publishing. Devil's Due Publishing was formed in 1999 as both a commercial art studio and a small press comic book publisher. Didn't take long for the company to shift all focus onto comic books, and quickly became one of today's top 10 comic book powerhouses. And today, DDP is here. Well, Josh Blaylock from DDP is
he
here.
He is DDP.
That's what he asked us to call him.
And he's here to help guide us through Comics 101, How to Make Comics Concept to Comic Shops. So
I have to confess, I don't have a clue what the hell I'm doing.
It's all been luck.
This has all been a lie.
So lesson number one.
This is actually an expose I wanted to unveil it to everybody.
You know, I took that description right off your website.
I did know that. That's as you were reading it, I went, oh, crap, I hope that was up to date.
Top 10. Top 9 now.
Well, Josh, I guess the first place to start, I would assume, and we're going to walk through creating a comic. We're not going to look at you know, comics in general or starting a publishing company, but a single comic. And I would assume that in some way that comes from the pitch, as people like to call it, whether it's internal or external, it starts with a pitch.
Yeah. Actually, it's good that you bring that up first because that's in the book I wrote. I'll do my plug. How to self-publish comics, not just create them. No, that is something that I called it the hook, in the same thing. That it's amazing how many and I'm guilty of it myself in the past. How many people go forward with a project without figuring out what the bare bones, simple, you know, one sentence, two sentence pitch for their idea is. You know, what is it that sets your idea apart from everything else that's going to make it better than, you know, and not that you're saying you're the best thing in the world, but you should feel strongly about it. And if there's a stack of other ideas there, what's the bare essence of your concept that makes it, you know, stand out from those?
When you're looking at submissions from people, I mean, is that really the easiest thing that they can do to try and make something stand out? Is have a good pitch, to have a good first sentence, you know, that describes the book.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, especially if you're just a writer. I mean, you know, if you send a script to an editor or anyone who's busy, and if you send them something that's a bunch of words, it's gonna sit on the desk forever. You know?
Right.
I mean, that's why, Devil's Due is repped by William Morris Agency, and you know, once we got in with them, they'd start sending all these movie screenplays over, like, yeah, you know, we want to have a meeting with this guy, and we just want to let you see some of the stuff he's done, here's a screenplay. It's like, that's 175 fucking pages.
It's not a comic,
cool.
it's a novel.
I got nothing to do one day, maybe I'll sit there and read some of it, but I mean, you know.
As far as trying to get something published, it's hard to...
I need an overview. Yeah. You know, let me know just the basic overview of something if you want us to look at it. I mean, if they're just sending it to us to let us know what the person's done before, that's cool, but if they want us to actually read it, I didn't mean to single them out because the guy that we have there, Scott's doing a kick-ass job for us. He's amazing. But I just using that as an example of anyone who sends concepts in, you know, if they don't send a brief synopsis that's like a couple sentences telling you what the idea is, then after that, a basic overview of the whole more complex story, you know, it'll probably get read eventually, but it's going to be a while. So
moving on a little bit, and we can always go back to the pitch, but moving on to the, sort of the overview, one of the things that I read somewhere or heard somewhere about an overview when you're writing that is you need to write that with sort of full disclosure, correct? I mean, telling people, telling the editor, telling, you know, whoever you're submitting it to, exactly what's happening in the story. You're not writing it as, you know, they're, like you're trying to entice them to read it as much as you're trying to explain exactly what is going on in this story from beginning to end in a very concise manner.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, you do want to grip them. I mean, you want to make them interested the same way, that because they know if it pulls them in, then it's probably going to pull other people in. So, you know, if it's like, this is about a potato that wears pajamas, you know, and it's like, oh my God, that's brilliant.
Tom, write that down.
You know? Did you use someone else send that in?
No, that's a free idea.
anybody can have that.
Rick has come up with the pitch for potato.
Potato wearing underwear. All right, start. I want an internet phenomenon. Start that tomorrow.
In an average month, whether it be from, you know, external pitches that are, you know, unsolicited, or pitches from internal staff, or, you know, from you know, the company that sends you scripts. How many pitches do you get in an average month?
I don't know. It could really depend. I'm going to guess on average like 10. I mean, it could be 20 something one month. It could be like just a few could trickle in a month. It's hard to say, because a lot of times all kinds of things come through the submissions. And they actually do come to us. We do see them. But, you know, it could be someone wanting to do pencils, someone who's a colorist or an inker. It could be someone who has an original idea they want to get published. I got one today that I just saw for a second. I mean, I'm not the one specifically that looks at all of them all the time, but they do come to me, so I can at least check them out. So if I see something that jumps out at me, I can be like, hey, let's take a closer look at that one. Somebody said, yeah, I'm a long-time aspiring comic book person and, you know, comic book creator, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I have this character that I made up, and I want to know how I could get them published. It's like, you know, it's you know, it might be sounding kind of brutal to some people, but it's like, you know, you got to go do your own research and your own knowledge and learn about the industry on your own and learn enough, and, you know, listen to things like this. Learn about how the process works before you go submit something, because, you know, I'll just give you a clue, that's not how it works. You don't say, oh, I made up a character.
Well, I think
I'm the only person in the world that's done that before. And
I think that's, you know, it's funny. I talked to Mike Norton. We were talking about sort of that same thing. It was like, before the internet, it was so difficult to know what, you know, I was an aspiring comic book artist when I was younger. I didn't even know what a comic book page looked like until I was probably in my 20s. You know, I had never actually seen one printed. And I think so many people have no concept of what, you know, what to submit or how to submit or what it's supposed to look like. You know, whether it's a script or whether it's penciled pages. And there's no format. There's no one format, especially for like a script.
It's ironic because back then it was harder, but you still could find it out if you were serious about it, you know? So now, in a way, it's kind of like, you know what? There's no excuse.
For not knowing.
You have absolutely no excuse.
Well, you should go out and buy How to Self-Publish Comics.
If you're serious about wanting... Yeah, exactly. Pullboxonline.com and download it.
Damn it didn't exist then.
Oh,
if only!
Is it available for download?
Yeah, sure, definitely, yeah.
Well, I'm a member there, so I should do that. How much is it online? I'll look it up.
We stumped him.
I'll look it up in a second.
Know, I don't know.
Well,
we can find out.
Let's try and move on, because we could probably talk about pitches and do that as an entire show on how to do a good
part
pitch.
Part one of an 8-part series.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's
going to
be.
Well, before we move on, real quick.
You're killing me.
I know, but this is important. What do you look for in a pitch? What, you know, kind of stuff gets you excited in a pitch? What has the best chance of...
I mean, part of it's subjective. It just has to jump out at us. But, you know, if it's something that's been done 1,000 times before and it doesn't really stand out from anything else, it's, you know, then it's not going to work. If it's just got to have some sort of unique twist to it, combined with the appearance that, okay, this is also going to be... the person's going to be professional... if it's an original pitch with a writer and an artist, you know, wanting us to publish something, is that a unique enough idea? Is it professionally packaged? You know, do they look like they're going to be reliable if we produce this? Is their letter written, you know, legibly? Do they look like they you know,
can write
higher
can
than a fifth grade reading level? And are they going to be okay to work with?
And okay,
do
that's interesting.
They seem like they have a decent business sense too, because you know, a lot of times it's kind of a joke. But I mean, the better the artist, the crazier they are. You know, I mean, the more amazing their talent is, the more
out
far,
there
far,
far
off they
yeah.
are from the business. You know,
there's a good balance you have to have.
Amazing yeah. artists out there who just aren't meant for the daily grind.
You have to have blood stains on the
and you know if. Sometimes you can take you can just say, you know what, we just acknowledge that's how that person is, and we're just going to get something amazing out of them whenever we can. But if it's a person, you know, like, and Tim Seeley, who's on here a lot, is the epitome of a perfect, like, the guy's amazing, talented, and he...
A workhorse.
He's in work yeah. every day before everyone else. I mean,
yeah.
every day, you know, if I come in at 8:55, he's probably been there for 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Just like clockwork.
The shelter closes at
6. The shelter closes at
6. Well, one more question. I know, I'm sorry, but when it comes to pitches, if someone is looking to pitch to you an ongoing series or you know, a mini series, do they need to have that fully? You know, if it's an ongoing series, say I have an idea for an ongoing series. How developed do I need to have it in order to pitch that to you?
I would want to see that, you know, couple sentence pitch or that small paragraph pitch of what the basic idea is. And then it, almost like if I was to say, here's the packet I'm going to make, you have that pitch so that someone glances at that. If that jumps out, me personally, if that jumped out at me, then I go, okay, I want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't want to know more, I'd know right away, okay, I looked at it, I'm not interested.
Right.
But I did actually look at it versus something that I'm like, oh, this is going to take forever to get to. So if it jumped out at me, then you get to the next stage where it's like, okay, let's see the overview. Okay, and then you can read like, okay, here's issue 1 through 5 or whatever it is. You know, here's a brief synopsis of each issue. You know, still brief.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if that's, you know, lures you in saying, okay, this is a really cool outline. I like the twist and turns they have in there. I like the way it ends. It's a nice, concise package. Or, you know, this is just an example of one thing, you know, like a mini series.
Right.
Then maybe they're, ironically, like what most people would think the opposite of, the least important thing is at the end. It's still important, but I don't need to see the whole issue. If I like the basic pitch and then I like the overview, if there's like 5 or 6 pages of a panel-to-panel breakdown and how you would treat the story, that's going to give me the confidence to call the person up and say, okay, cool, we like this idea. We like the way you're writing it. Because if we see the pitch got us to read it, the overview showed us that you have the whole story planned out, and a few pages show how you could execute mm-hmm. the panel-to-panel, page-by-page breakdown. That right there tells us, okay, you have
the
ability
along.
To go through with the whole thing, and you've thought it through to the end. So, whereas people do the opposite, and they send this break, you know, this whole full script, and you don't. That's what you're concerned about. You're like, man, if I sit here and read this for the next hour,
and I don't like it,
what happens if like halfway through it starts to suck, or it starts to have like all these plot holes and all this stuff?
Or the other extreme is where they send in, like you said, I got a character.
Yeah,
that I want to get published.
And,
how do I do it?
Sticking to the writing part because we're talking about concepts and things. As far as art goes, that's always easier because it's a classic case of you look at it within less than a second, you know, I like it or I don't.
Right.
I mean, that's as simple as that. And there's thousands of books that you can go read on how to draw and you know, I won't waste anyone's time on that because there's people that wrote much better.
Have you?
Well, you can buy How to Draw Comics by Tim Seeley.
Available
at Pullbox.
I highly recommend, yeah. It is available at Pullbox, and it's available at retailers everywhere. Yeah, Tim Seeley wrote a follow-up to the How to Self-Publish, How to Be a Comic Book Artist, not just How to Draw. And it's all about, you know, what's it like to get up every day and draw? What kind of paper do you need? What do editors expect you to do? The simple things like stay in touch with your editor. You can't go all week and not talk to your editor. You know, even if you might be getting up and working 12 hours a day, working on your page, kicking your, you know, busting your ass, but your editor doesn't know that. And you have to acknowledge, too, your editor deals with people every day who are complete slackers and are late all the time and drive them crazy. And if you don't stay in touch with them, it's just like, you know, not if you're in high school and you don't tell your parents what you're doing and you disappear for 2 days. You might not have been doing anything wrong. You might have been come home and didn't see you. But, yeah, I mean, just call and say, hey, what's up? Here's what I'm doing. Talk to you later. I mean, you know, he goes into all that kind of stuff that people don't typically write about, and that's what we're trying to do with that whole series as we continue to do more of those. We don't have anything planned right now, but whenever we do a book like that, that's the purpose behind it.
Right.
Hello, this is Steve Niles, and you are listening to Around Comics.
You have, you know, let's take a, you know, kind of a case study here. You have a pitch. You like it. It's either come from internally or it's been, you know, a pitch that came from outside. And you're like, hey, this is something we want to roll with. I feel like this is going to be, you know, a solid hit for us. What's the next step after you decide to move forward with the project?
Pretty much, you know,
party. Champagne, bro.
No, do you at that point do you like assign an editor to that project? That
yeah, you have some. Well, it really depends. Like if it's we run into the thing where we can only publish so many books too. Mm-hmm. But if it's a satellite, I call them satellite studios. If it's a like Lost Squad or Night Wolf or Black Harvest. Those are projects where other creators are putting the project together. They're packaging
completely.
The whole
thing. It's
they're basically handing you a disc. Yeah. Here's the comic.
And we have to be really concentrated months before that on the marketing of it, and you know, which goes into the whole. The hook goes back to like also you have to have that hook so you know when you're marketing it how you get the word out why this is cool. So you know we're focused on what's going to go into the previews ads. What's going to go to retailers via physical mailing or email news blast? What's going to go on, you know, if it's going to be, if we feel that through the periodical format, through the monthly format, it's going to be okay, so sales, but we feel like it's going to be strong as a graphic novel, then we have to focus on putting material together 8 months in advance for the book market. Because you have to advertise to that much farther in advance than you have to advertise to the direct market. So that's the kind of stuff we're thinking about. And we're just kind of waiting on the finished package to come each month or however regularly it's supposed to come out. And kind of what we toned down our involvement with a lot of other you know, satellite operations because it's really hard to do that shit. I mean, it took us years to learn everything. We're still learning things, and I do pride ourselves on being way more on top of it than most other companies. And if it takes us so long to do it, we're not gonna be able to sit there and like CliffsNotes version explain it to some creators that are working on something, you know, how much stuff we need and everything. So. I'm only taking on a creator-owned idea that is very clearly something that I feel I could probably get set up as a film or television property or video game, or if it's a creator that I know is going to sell. Mm-hmm. We haven't run across that yet, really, where we know it's some huge name creator that's going to sell a bazillion copies of books. So far it's been on the film side. Fortunately, I mean, I can say we have the track record that almost everything we've picked up has gotten set up somewhere or is just about to. So as far as once we put that rule in place, if it's something we're doing that's based on one of our books that we're putting out regularly that we know is one of our, you know, books that sells, then it's done in-house and it's making money for the company.
That would be like Hackslash would be an example of that, right?
Yeah. Well, that Hackslash is a special case. So let's say if it's a G.I. Joe story or, you know, Sheena or Chucky or any of that stuff, then, yeah, Mike O'Sullivan is editor on the book. Mark Powers does editing on our fantasy books. And, yeah, they're put in place of it. And then you just start the process in motion. They make out their schedule for it. The scheduling is done both on the production side on the publishing side and on the editorial side. Editorial is concerned about, well, first it starts with publishing. Okay, Sam Wells is assistant publisher. Technically, I'm a publisher, but he pretty much does all the publishing
necklace,
work.
Your giant necklace that says publisher.
Don't tell anyone about that.
So the first thing the publisher is concerned with is, okay, when do these ads need to go to the distributor, the Diamond? How many months in advance are we going to need that? When's the stuff going to need to go to the printer? When are we going to need, you know, all this stuff done? And then from publishing, it goes to editorial and marketing. And then Susan Bishop, who handles marketing, knows, okay, I'm going to need all this material for ads and for to release
previews
to the distributor.
And for
previews, online stuff, review copies sent out to retailers.
Podcast.
Yeah, everything, you know. Knows that months in advance. Knows, okay, I'm going to have to get postcards made to send to Borders and Barnes & Noble and all those guys, because you have to work on those buyers. Basically, you have like half a dozen buyers that control what's bought in all the chains in the country.
Right.
So.
And why is that? You had mentioned before that that's you have to work on that way in advance.
It's just the way the industry works.
That's just the way that the book buying industry
is. They're
so
completely
much
opposite. You know, comic books, the direct market is thousands of retailers, and even though it's far, you need to get it to them far in advance, and that's usually so much farther than people expect, but it's actually not that far in advance.
And they do their ordering
comparatively
on pretty
thousands
much
of people,
basis,
shorter span of time, and then you go to the book market, that's a few people, and you know, controlling the biggest percentage of that industry, and you got to get it to them so far in advance, because you know, if you're a buyer for a big chain, you've got hundreds of people sending you stuff telling you what you should buy, what they should buy. And so you can't wait until you know, right before your book comes out to send it to them. You know, if we've got, right now we're doing the Nye Incidents, which is an alien abduction slash horror story. You know, the concept originally by Whitley Strieber, who...
Whoa.
Yeah, he wrote Communion, scared the hell out of me as a
that
kid
book,
with
that
Christopher
movie,
Walken movie.
That scared the shit out of me.
Scared the shit out of me for years. So, actually, I'll go back to that in a second. That was this is like full circle for my life right now. We're doing that book, and Whitley Strieber is a hugely popular author. He's had a number of bestsellers, had things made into film. So there's no reason that graphic novel, this is an original story, originally his idea.
Based on the...
It's being written with another author, too, that was... Craig Spector, a horror novelist, but you know that should do very well as a graphic novel in the book market, and it should do well as a graphic novel in comic shops too. And it's going to be serialized as monthly in the comic shops. But you know, to get that through, you know, to get them to remember it, I mean, you know, we're sending them postcards or just a printout or email blast.
Because like you said, they're getting millions and, you know, who knows how many.
Just saying, hey, here's the Nye Incidents. It's by Whitley Strieber from Communion. Just a little blurb, just a little postcard. Then, a couple months later, they're going to get something else. A couple months later, they're going to get something else. And then our regular, like, we do like a quarterly or twice a year, a big catalog we make ourselves of the, we call it the BMU, the Book Market Update, with it's just all the graphic novels we have coming out. So they can look through that, and they're going to see it again. Meanwhile, the Diamond sales reps are going out to their branches, talking to them. Hopefully, the product's getting pushed. You know, so we have to educate the sales team for the distributors on that so that they know how to push your product properly. Then you have to turn right around and assume that they're not even going to mention it. just because you never know. You just have to assume. You have
to
talking with
them.
You have
like,
to think that way.
Plan B into action.
And you push that, and then...
They're not listening.
Then you just hope that by the time you're ready for your book to come out, and usually with the book market, the orders come in from everyone from the direct market, and a few chains orders trickle in, and you look, and you see, okay, they didn't order, but I know this is something they probably want.
Go back, you have to go
you
back.
We'll call Diamond and call the sales reps and say,
wow,
hey,
Go tell
so and so over there that they didn't order this. Why not? And they'll go, oh, they meant to order like 500 copies. Okay. And then, I mean, you have to stay on top of it.
It
came through. You know, we've sold. You know the Forgotten Realms fantasy books do phenomenal for us. You don't see that stuff on the Diamond charts, but we've sold like over 40,000, 50,000 copies of that Forgotten Realms Homeland book.
Wow.
And it still sells.
And is that mostly through the chains? Is that more through Borders and Barnes & Noble?
It sells great everywhere. Comic shops keep picking it up. The bookstores pick it up. But yeah, like one of the really big chains didn't order any for like one of the new issues coming out, and we saw it on there saying what the hell? What's going on? So we had to call and say, hey, what's going on? And they said, oh, they changed buyers. Like I didn't know how to get it.
If you wouldn't have noticed it.
And but the Whitley Strieber thing,
Tom's all excited now.
Once I like started to get older and like horror movies didn't scare me or whatever, and I just I went from being terrified of horror movies to going, that's just stupid, you know, it doesn't bother me. The one thing that still freaked me out was aliens, you know, because they could be real.
And, watch out for those graves.
Ghosts, to this day, like ghosts don't bother me or anything, you know. But aliens. The alien shit.
I had a friend creeps me out. When I was in grade school, who was for some reason his dad was like in a like almost in some sort of weird cult, I think at some point in his life. But I mean, I was too young to figure that out. But he was big into the Whitley Strieber stuff because a lot of it isn't just sort of it's sort of like aliens plus some sort of new age a little bit.
He's got a website, Unknown Country.
Yeah.
And it just reports on all kinds of crazy
he's got weird conspiracy theory, stuff. Yeah, he's got his own crazy.
Some of it's out there and then some of it you're like, yeah.
Our first guest tonight is author of the runaway bestseller, Transformation, The Breakthrough. He is Whitley Strieber. There is the book. It is published by Beechtree Books, a division of William Morrow, and it is a continuation of his enormous bestseller, Communion. A continuation how, Whitley?
Well, it's not really a continuation. What happened to me was, after I finally realized that this probably was real, something that was non-human, that was intelligent, and that was seemed to be, I don't know, from another planet. I would guess so. Where else? I mean, But I turned toward it, and I started trying to challenge it, to get through my fear. And over a period of months, I formed a relationship with them that I believe could be a template almost, almost as if they have one end of a phone, and we've had two wires. Now, if we start trying to have this relationship, we'll have a phone, too. Maybe.
So transformation is the story of contact.
It's the story of an attempt at a relationship with them. If they turn out to be real, as I think they are, then yeah, it is a story of contact.
Communion ended with what?
With
that they had invaded you somehow? Or?
Well, it ended with a series of speculations, essentially, about whether or not they were a physical reality. And transformation starts with and goes through the process of how I discovered that they apparently are. Which just seems extraordinary to me, even now, even as I talk to you. But it does seem to be the case.
How do you know you're not nuts?
Well,
when I was like 8 years old, my friends like read Communion, and you're like, I was eight, and I read it, and then we watched the movie, and I didn't sleep.
I didn't read the book, and I'm glad I didn't, because the book's probably way more terrifying.
It's horrifying.
Man, so this weird full circle life story. I was setting it. You know, I was already scared of alien stuff. And when the trailers came out for that, it was just this alien face staring at you.
Yeah.
And it was just fading. It was getting closer. And I'm thinking to myself, I never mentioned it. I'm just like, I'll never see that movie. But all we ever did, my dad was never into sports or anything, you know, and I'm not really. So, like, all we did is, like, one of our big things is we always went to movies, like, every week. And him and my stepmom got in a fight. And he's just kind of frustrated. He's like, I'm going to the movies. And he's like looking around, and he says, I think I'm going to see this. I'm going to go see this Communion. You know, let's go to the movies. And I'm thinking like, I don't want to go. And then my stepmom's like doing dishes or something. She's like, just go with him. Just go with him.
You have no choice.
I'm like, I'll do dishes. I'll do dishes.
Can't you guys just talk it out?
I went to go see Communion and terrified, and there's that one scene where everyone who's seen it knows Christopher Walken, who's scary enough.
Yeah.
Sitting in this chair in his bedroom, and he hears something, and this big giant black eyeball peeks out over the corner, and then it goes right back. It goes back into hiding, and it's so terrifying.
You're frightening me again. I know. I haven't watched it since I was eight. since I said
well, here's the thing. I there was so much.
Gee, I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well,
I'm gonna have to go rent it.
This could be a good happy ending though, because I didn't watch. You know, I closed my eyes through so much of it. Whenever he went on that ship, I just closed my eyes, or I just didn't look or whatever. And so once we started talking to, you know, talking about doing this book, I'm like, oh my god, this is insane. You know, this is happening. And I went looking for it, and I couldn't find the movie anywhere. Not Blockbuster. Not on Amazon.com. You know,
Crank. Did you try Crank?
Yeah, Crank's Cave. You might have had it.
Well, I found it at Tower. So I went, bought it, and I watched it. And the parts on the ship are so, so dated. And I mean, it was done low budget for the time. And now it's just ridiculous. So the reason it was so terrifying is because I didn't look at it, and I just heard the
Imagine.
Sounds, and I imagined it. So
I just
it's
imagine
a thousand times
having,
scarier that way.
Having an alien force himself upon me. Sorry, guys.
That's your own thing.
Okay, well.
Boss, what's the matter?
There was something here.
Shake it out. Come on.
Very bad.
Wow. That was a nightmare. What are you talking about?
No, Dad.
Huh? Hey, that was a nightmare.
They had me, Dad.
Nightmares do that, you know, sometimes. I mean, if it didn't do that, then it wouldn't be a nightmare. You know what I mean? I mean,
I wanted to go back a little bit. Now, this whole time that you know, you're working with trying to sell the
that
book.
That alien's
going to
be staring at you in all the Devil Zoo comics now. Our ads.
Yeah, oh, God.
You have to actually read. I was rereading the mock up on Zombie today, and you get to the alien page where he's just staring at you, and you're like, ah! Okay. No, never mind.
Love
and then
the book.
You're trying to read the page to the side of it, but you can't help but, like, look at it's gazing at you.
If it wants to experiment on you. It wants to experiment on you.
Aliens probe. Are, if we become very successful next year, you can probably credit the aliens, but we won't admit it.
Well, you know, once you know, you're looking at a release date and all of your marketing, do you start there and then work backwards to develop a timeline on when you need to have all of the different pieces that go into place to get this project together? Is that how you do it?
Ideally, you do it the other way. You say, okay, how far do we, you know, if we were to do the marketing right and we were to really spend our time doing this, when should the book come out?
Okay.
But it does work both ways. A lot of times, you know, people will say, "Oh, my, you know, okay, so if it's a licensed thing, you know, can we get this out by, you know, if someone were to come to us today, like, okay, we got this thing we want to do, can we get it out by July?" We'll say no, because we're working on solicitations for July now.
But what if we pay you more money?
It's only in March.
And you're like, yeah, it still hurts, but no.
Well, people don't, you know, people definitely that don't realize how far ahead the sales cycle is for it, because, you know, it's not, you can put the whole comic book together, and even though that takes, ideally, you have a good solid, you know, 3-4 months to do that, when you throw in that your cover needs to get to Diamond, you know, just under 5 months in advance, pretty much, so that it can be circulated. Excuse me, I'm trying not to burp on on the mic.
It's okay, it's a brand new pop screen.
Miller
Don't
High
worry
Life
about it.
Down in
champagne and beers, my friend.
Woo!
Working man.
Working man.
I distracted you.
Where am I?
What were we talking about?
Oh my god, 3 hours just went by. All our watches stopped.
Dude. Communion. You just reached.
All right, enough about so the cover's gotta be out 5 months in advance.
So that you can get the Diamond, so it can circulate, so they can, you know, put out the solicitations, so that basically, say, 4 months before a comic book is supposed to come out, you get the ad materials and all that stuff to the distributor. 2 months after that, vaguely or roughly, the previews catalog is going to come out, advertising the books that people can buy at the shop and retailers can place their orders. And about a month before the book is supposed to come out, you get all your orders in, and you have just enough time to print it and get it shipped to the stores.
So 5 months in advance, you need the cover. Is that the reason we see so many covers nowadays that have nothing to do with what's inside the book?
Yes. That's why you see so many of our covers that are very conceptual. So, I mean, honestly, we do. It causes us to try to get the whole script written 5 months before the book's even supposed to come out, so that we at least know what the plot's going to be, so that we can do that. But sometimes it still gets crazy, and you know, especially if it's something, if it's a G.I. Joe book, and we have a plot, and we get a cover worked on, and they'll approve the art and everything, and then later on someone comes through and says, you know what, from as far as approvals go from the licensor standpoint, we don't want this to happen. Then you got to change something. Well, guess what? Your cover doesn't have anything to do with that.
We've decided that they can't carry guns anymore.
I'm not going to go into that.
Norton told us some horror
stories.
You're
not supposed to point guns at people in certain cases.
Oh, okay.
But apparently that
snake
certain case changes every time.
We've decided that snake
guys can talk.
And, yeah. Sometimes, for whatever reason, Destro should not be honorable since he's a bad guy. And Zartan should not be so conflicted. And yeah.
Things happen. Things change that are out of your control sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, that was...
Zaymot and Tomaz wouldn't necessarily address the same.
Sometimes... You know, I would never had that question, but...
You are such a nerd, Tom.
Not a different license, but some... You know, we've had someone say, this character's not on model. And then you say... Okay, well, just go ahead and color it and send it back, and then it goes back, and they're like, "Oh, that's great,
perfect."
So, or a person changes, and then they, you know, thing is, you never know on the licensor's end who you're going to get that's approving the stuff. Is it someone that's genuinely a fan of the stuff? Is it someone that has any knowledge of the characters? You know, are they going
having
to
a bad day?
Exactly. Or did someone just get yelled at and everyone has to really make sure they're doing something to make sure it looks like they're doing their job?
None of it has anything to do with telling a story is what it comes down to. You know what I mean? I was going to ask you, you know, you're working so far in advance. It's like how, in going back to someone trying to pitch you a story, trying to put together a package or working with a publisher, you know, I'd imagine you really want to have that story, you know, as tight as you possibly can going into it. Now, obviously, the licensing brings, you know, a completely different aspect into it where things can change. But how often do you run into an issue where, you know, the creative team is working on it and, you know, 3 months or 2 months before it's going to be released, they decide to change something or they want to change something? How does that, you know, work?
That hasn't been too big of a problem or anything, especially, I mean, most of our stuff has been licensed or the stuff that's not is being handled by those creators, and it's their project. So it is up to them what they decide to do with it. So I think the problem that comes up with the non-licensed properties is that, you know, they just don't sell as much, you know. Mm-hmm. So your budget's more restrained. So if you have a problem or some complication on the creative side, you really have to juggle, you know, okay.
Is it worth it to...
How much can we... really ride the creator to change something, or to, you know, how many times can we go back to them to tweak something or to make it work if there's only a certain budget within this project, you know, because eventually they, you know, and you can't, I'm not saying you can't do it, but you just have to, you're like anything, you got to pick your battles and,
right.
And, so it goes in phases, you know, you try to like, you know, hammer something until it's perfect. And then eventually you'll back off.
But at some point,
it's for a while,
diminishing return, or you just get to a point where it's not worth, you know, maybe the effort.
Yeah.
Or it's,
but
you know,
then that goes back into you want to be proud of everything you put out.
Sure.
And, you know, so.
It just depends on it. And I guess that kind of comes
because
into
you have to solicit something. So, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's good.
You have to solicit something so far in advance, you know, if all of a sudden you got your script in, you get your covers done, you advertise something, and then an artist just disappears off the face of the earth, or like, you know, Xbox 360 comes out or something. Then, you know,
bane of all.
Then you gotta, like, you know, and something gets extremely behind. Then, if it goes a certain amount past due, like a month past due, you know, all of a sudden it's gonna affect the returnability of it on the sales level, because
it's gonna hurt your sales.
When something's through the direct market, it's non-returnable, which is the, you know, kind of catch 22. It's sort of one good and bad thing about the direct market is whatever sold is sold, and you know you don't have to worry about giving anyone any money back. But if a book's extremely late, then it can be returnable and it can take you 90 days to get paid instead of 30 days to get paid from the distributor. So you know, you might bite the bullet and decide, okay, we're going to get someone else to jump on and help on the book, or we're going to do this or that. And it's a
juggling act. It's what it sounds like, is that you have so many things that could go wrong at any time, you know, whether it's from a marketing aspect, a sales aspect, a creator aspect,
act of God,
a licensing aspect. Yeah, I mean, act of God, you know, whether it's shipping or whatever. I mean, there's so many things that could possibly go wrong to change the success of a book or lack thereof.
So then, you like, at the end of the day, you're like, what the hell did my day have to do with anything about publishing, about making a comic book? You know, I was on the phone with four people, you know, about, you know, return spreadsheet policies and return policy. And, you know, so that's when it goes back to owning a company or running a company, you know, is its own thing completely. Mm-hmm. So whether you're a comic book publisher or you're a florist or you're a, you know, dog walker or, you know, whatever your job is, or if you're a computer programmer, not that you do those jobs, that you own the companies or run the companies, all those jobs are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same set of responsibilities. And so that's where I'm different than, like, having an editor in chief on board, you know. It just, I actually come from a creative background, so that's...
It allows you to understand that process, you know, and foresee some of those things.
Yeah, and hopefully I can look at something, in as far as it's all subjective, but look at something and go, yeah, that's cool, that's not cool, that's lame.
I think when it comes down to it, you're the one that signs off on it. You know?
Yeah.
And you're the last stop on that.
Hey, I'm Jerry Duggan.
And I'm Brian Fassain.
And you're listening to Jimmy the Shoe.
It's 10 a.m.
No, I think you're listening to Around Comics, right?
My bad.
Around Comics.
I like girls.
You're listening to Around Comics.
I like girls.
You know, talking about getting things out on time and delivering and previews and all that, one of the trends I'm starting to see is, especially in, like, miniseries, and we keep hearing this from a lot of writers and creative teams, they'll say, you know, we're doing a 4-issue miniseries or a 6-issue miniseries, and we want to make sure that before we solicit it, it's already in the can. And we're starting to hear that more and more all the time.
That all has to do with how deep your pockets are.
Okay.
Marvel and DC, you know, they've, especially DC because of Time Warner, you know, they can really just sit there and, you know, let's just, for easy math, say it costs $10,000 to put a comic book together, you know. So if you want to wait 6 issues before you do that, okay, before you start to, let's say you want to wait until you got 5 issues before you solicit it, okay, $50,000. Meanwhile, okay, now you're going to go ahead and solicit. So you've got, let's just for no more easy math, say it's $5,000 goes into the basic ads and advertisements and posters or whatever you're going to do. So meanwhile, it's going to take you like 4 months before that book comes out from the time you first solicit it. So there's $20,000. Meanwhile, you just added on another $40,000 in a creative cost. You got $90,000 plus $20,000, $110,000. You know,
if you, and you just don't round even know down, before you,
you
even have
grand
a book,
in a book before it even comes out. Yeah. And all that, as long as the book doesn't tank, you're going to get all that money back and you're going to profit off of it, but you know, can you sit around and wait?
You got to have the cash flow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took us a while to get to the point to where, like I said, like, we get those scripts right before they need to be solicited. So that's where we have the upper hand on a lot of companies smaller than us, you know, that strive to do the same thing. But, you know, sometimes other publishers, they just make the cover, have the basic idea what the book's going to be, and then scramble to get the book done even later in the process, or you have a project where someone's if it's the project's going to be a total gamble, you just have someone working on the project more on the back end than on getting paid in advance. That's if the way to go when you're a smaller publisher to do it right is you get, especially if you're trying to self-publish and just break in, no one's promised any money up front. You know, really, really focus on how you're going to market it and push it and everything and get that stuff right. That's why I really stress in all the stuff that I wrote that there's no hurry. Everyone gets this sense, and we still fall prey to it sometimes, you know, even at DDPs. Once you have an idea, you feel like, oh, I got to get it out now.
Got to get it out. Yeah, it's got to hit
the
stands.
No, you don't. There's no fucking reason why you have to get it out right away. You know, I mean, wait. You might wait. If you wait a whole year before you even, you know, longer than you wanted to, but you do it right, it makes all the difference. Because once you start the process, you're stuck. You're going to be trapped doing it for months. And the worst thing is to know that you just started off on the wrong foot. Now you're stuck doing it, and now no one wants to buy
this
thing.
It's not like there's an empty spot on the comic shelves that's waiting just for that book that people are going to notice that it's not.
And you really just got to go into it. You got to be brutal with yourself. No one cares about your damn comic book. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, it's just you're like, you got to have confidence in yourself, but you got to also say, like, no one gives a shit about this idea I have. I have to figure out why they should and make sure that they know about it and do it right, you know, whether that's... Look at all your options, you know. If you're going to publish it yourself, what's the hook? How are you going to market it? How are you going to make it stand out from everything else? Are you going to partner with another publisher? But even if you partner with someone like us or Image or any other person like that, company like that, you still got to find out how to pimp it yourself.
Right.
Because, you know, you should
do so much. Any smaller publisher can only do so much for any book.
Yeah.
I mean, let alone one that they're looking at half the profit. It's
the entertainment industry. You know,
it's almost similar to like the music industry. If you're a band, you know, it's like you don't go out on a mini tour before you're tight, before you have something that people are going to enjoy. And, you know, you're not going to release a comic book before it's good. You know, I see a lot of parallels between, you know, like independent rock labels and, you know, independent comic publishers.
And you've just got to, the jobs are already taken. You want someone else. You go into, like,
you're trying to push somebody out.
If you go into comics or music or movies or anything entertainment-wise, the jobs are taken. You want someone else's job.
Yeah.
There's no opening. You're trying to take someone else's job.
It's not like it's growing like gigantic.
New jobs.
Everyone's there and they're all snuggled up and they're nice. You're basically looking for a house that someone already lives in. You're looking to just knock on the doors until someone's finally like, oh, I couldn't pay my rent this month and I got to move. And you're like, score, I got a place to live.
And so what do? You ask for advice from
and
people
you start
in
out
the industry.
And you start out in a shithole and you eventually get to move someplace nicer.
All right, well, Josh, wanted to talk with you a little bit about how you juggle your labor. And for a publisher your size, that has to be, you know, a constant concern. And you've talked about working with outside creative studios. And I'm sure that you have, I know Tim Seeley is an in-house creator for you. And then I would assume that you work with a lot of freelancers as well.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, our main hub, like Tim's a full-time artist. We're looking at bringing a couple other people in for creative duties. Brian Crowley letters all of our books. But the hub of our staff in-house is administrative. And, you know, whether that's administrative on the side of like doing... HR kind of stuff, or accounting, or the marketing, editorial, publishing, all that. The majority is outsourced because you never know how your publishing schedule is going to change from month to month. So, it takes a handful of people to put together a comic book. So if you're putting together 10 books in 1 month, you're going to need 30, 40, or whatever people to put those books together. And... to bring that much of a staff on, sometimes it'd be a little crazy. So,
sure.
I mean, pretty much that's how the comic industry's worked ever since FedEx came out. as soon as the creation of overnight delivery was invented, they went away from the bullpen formula, started outsourcing everything, and now with the internet, we'll get a submission in, and, we're just looking at the artwork, not knowing anything about the artist, and if we say, okay, that's cool, then you start talking to them, you find out, oh, that guy's in Lumpur, Malaysia, or that guy's in Rome, or okay, that person's down the street.
It's a shrinking world.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing a neat influx of European and South American artists, I've noticed.
It seems like a few years ago, a lot of Italians came out of nowhere, and then a couple years ago, a lot of Malaysians came onto the scene, and then a lot of, it's almost funny. I don't know if maybe I'm just making it up in my head, but it seems like you can almost tell when the country got the high-speed access.
Yeah, we should check South America for the high-speed access.
You're just okay, what's next? There's some badass artists somewhere in the former Soviet Union that's going to start sending some cool stuff.
Probably not too far off of the truth.
Saying it half-jokingly, but, I don't have any data to back it up, but it's probably got some truth to it.
Absolutely, sure. So Well, I tell you, we've gone over the pitch and editorial and you know, marketing. Your guys' approach to marketing and how you solicit, and you know, you're putting these books together and you're balancing, you know, your labor, whether it be, you know, pencilers, inkers, colorists, letterers, and we'll in follow up Comics 101 episodes, we'll go over a lot of those individually. So kind of at the end there, you have, whether digitally, or you guys don't do like boards anymore, I'm sure, right?
We've actually almost completely weeded out people sending in physical pencils, which is a big step. It used, you know, pretty much, it's been, the computer has been done for the lettering and the coloring, mm-hmm. you know, for years now, but we would have the physical art sent to us, and then we would ship it somewhere else, have the inker work on it. And then, which, I mean, that definitely accumulates in price, but you don't want the pen, unless it's specifically a creator-owned project, you don't want the penciler to send it straight to the inker, because the editor needs to look at everything, make sure it matches up with the script. But now most inkers have the capability to just get the high-res files, print them out on their own printers. They'll print it out in like a
blue line
mm-hmm. on the same size board that they need to draw the pencils on, you know, 11 by 17. And they can just ink right over the blue ink, and the ink's not going to show up when it copies or scans. So then they just do it that way. So
to really revolutionize the process of
Definitely, of
handing things off. Yeah. And that's how, you know, we talked with Andy Parks way back when, and he talked about, you know, the evolution of comics, and the specialized task really came out of the need of getting a comic book out on time.
It's an assembly line is what it is, yeah.
Absolutely.
And now you can do, now the assembly line doesn't have to be, you don't have, because if you're shipping FedEx, you don't want to send a page a day because it'll cost you a retarded amount of money, but you know, now you don't have to wait for there to be 11 pages or 22 pages done. As soon as they're done with it, they can scan it, send it off, the inker can start working on it, so it can even shorten the assembly line process down even more.
Sure.
Imagine it also kind of shortens up, like, problems.
Or it can, you know, you can, like, add to the slack time of the...
Oh, yeah.
The poor colorist is the one that always gets it in the end, and they have to just, you know, they're always the one, because if the penciler's late at all, then the inker's got to speed up a little bit, and if the inker's late at all, you know, then it just accumulates and accumulates and accumulates.
And the colors.
Fortunately, the letterer, you know, he can jump on it as soon as there's any kind of artwork, he can get started on it, and then wrap it all up once it's been colored. But, yeah, the colors are the ones that
they get screwed.
Pour one out for our homies.
Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, everyone pour a little beer out for our homies, the colors.
Well, and then, you know, I've worked in printing, you know, most of my, you know, professional career as a designer or art director, and it's the printers.
Expert.
Print this tomorrow, please.
I did say in a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Do we have an expert chime for when someone proclaims some job?
yes,
but it's the printers that always kind of say it always comes down to the printer, and that's kind of where I want to wrap up here. Is you have a comic? It's, you know, on you know, CD, even though it's probably FTP.
It is all FTP now. Yeah.
So yeah, loaded up to your printers FTP. What printers do you use, or what's that process like? Do you use different printers? Do you get proofs that you approve? Are you on press when that stuff? What's the whole printing process for
ideally,
you guys?
Ideally, first we like to do the theoretical ideal situation.
Sure.
You know, the book's all done, everything's ready to go, all the colors are completed, and the design department's packaged everything together and made it look pretty, and then it gets sent off, uploaded to the printer. They go ahead and basically turn it into a PDF, and we send it to them. And then PDF's pretty much print ready. They go ahead and they'll output a mock-up from one of their printer, one of their, like, whatever, I don't know what they call those kind of printers, but they send us a big expensive mock-up. No. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's our last chance to look at it and say, okay, here's any last-minute mistakes we catch. And if that happens, we have a chance to upload new files that are the correct versions. And then they go to press with it, and as soon as it's done, it gets... if you use one of the major printers like Quebecor that has a relationship with Diamond Distribution, Diamond will actually... They drive their trucks there every week. So, you know, Tuesday night, those books... They're usually printed over the weekend. Tuesday, they're all assembled and ready to go. Wednesday morning, and crack of dawn, you know... It's Tuesday, one of those days. They're picked up, and then they're taken to one of the main warehouses and then distributed out from there to all the other warehouses, and that's how they get out the following week, every Wednesday. So what happens sometimes is that, let's say, a book's late and you're really trying to hustle to meet the deadline, you might have, you know, 18 pages colored, but and you've got the whole book lettered, and, but you're waiting on those last four pages of colors, and or you're waiting, or if it's a licensed property, you have stuff ready to go, but it hasn't been technically approved yet. You go ahead and you send it to the printer anyway, so they can get it on their schedule, get it moving along, and then when they send you their mock-up, you go ahead and you'll like put in some filler pages, you know, or you'll put in the penciled versions of the pages. Then you go back later, and you say, okay, here's the finished pages. Or if the licensor comes back and says, you know, you got to change this, this, and this, you make those changes, you know, while you're in a panic, and then you turn around and you send it back to the printer. And the thing is, like, you do incur a cost every time you do that, and, you know, you have to, you don't, if you do that to your printer all the time, then they're going to get sick of it, so you try to decide, you know, you
don't want to burn
that, you don't want to do that, as, you know, all the time, every time. So, ideally, you get everything to them ready to go. But also, I mean, once you get working with one or two printers, you know, exclusively, and you get the relationship going with them, they know you're going to send them stuff every week, and they know, like, okay, this person gives us $500,000 or $1 million of business a year, or whatever it is, or you know, what they know you're a regular customer.
If you pay on time, they like you.
Then they're going to work with you, yeah. So it really comes to, if you're a guy putting out a book, you just got one book, then, yeah, you're going to have to wait. You're going to have to do everything by the book the way they want it to be done, you know, because, frankly, if you don't, they don't need your business.
Right.
So you definitely have to start that relationship off right.
Sure. Now, do you have someone at Club Corp that either works for DDP or you guys hire out to do press checks to make sure that the quality of the books coming off the press is
we've never, you know, we don't do press checks. Okay. The industry is just too hectic to, I mean, you do, there's periodicals coming out constantly. And, you know, if it was a book with selling 400,000 copies a month, like a major magazine or something like that, then yeah, we might be worthwhile doing that. But we run a little tighter ship here in the comic book industry.
Okay. But you get your proofs in, you check those, and it's like, okay, and I'm sure their press operators are good enough to know that it's going to match this proof.
I mean, well, like, the closest thing we do is we get a physical printed out proof that we have the option. We could just approve everything over FTP looking at the screen, but it's I don't know if it's from having been raised, still being used to reading paper our whole lives, but I don't know what it is. I can look at something on a screen 1,000 times and not catch an error, and as soon as it's printed out on paper, I see all these mistakes.
It glows.
Yeah, and I really do think that that's going to change. I think that if I'd grown up from an infant, you know, reading on screen, that's what I'd be used to, but it's just some weird thing where I got to see it on paper to catch it.
Do you guys actually get, and I'm getting geeky, and
paper nerd.
Paper nerd.
I've been in the printing industry longer than Tom.
Spreads where they're, like, you know, out of white as they would actually be printed on sheet, or you get them assembled in order?
Usually it's printed, you know, on basically their equivalent of a regular, you know, laser jet printer, and they just make a mock-up for us.
Okay, so you don't.
But
get,
yeah,
like,
it's funny. Like, every now and then, you'll just get this, like, press copy. You're like, okay. They usually that'll come. That
huge
doesn't happen.
40-inch sheet.
That actually hasn't happened in a long time, but yeah, that'll happen just randomly sometimes. Yeah, for I don't know how many people know that when a book prints, it's got to be in an eight page signature. They call it. Which just means you can only print in H page groups, so your book's got to be 24 pages or 40 pages or 32 pages. And then they actually print it on a press where they print all of the 8 pages on one side and then the other pages on the other side on a big, giant, like, poster-sized piece of paper. And they fold it up a crazy way, like when you buy a map, you know, and then they just... somehow they cut the sides of it, and magically it's a book.
That's magic. How it works. Don't look behind the curtain.
There's no mathematical formula behind it.
Has a chance to go through a printing press, it's a neat process.
You run it through some unicorn, ground up unicorn horns. And it shows up
Staples
and
everything. And it's done.
The pinch of pixie dust is very important.
Canadians with their presses.
All right, well, guys, I think that was about as quick an overview of concept to comic shops as we could.
It was a lot of information.
I don't know if we answered questions or came up with 100 more.
We raised all new questions.
All new questions.
The best thing is when you ask a question that you didn't know you should have asked. When you learn a question.
Slow clap.
Slow clap, Josh.
I was hoping for a golf clap, but...
thank you. I did want to ask you about the book. That DDP put out, and you specifically put out
how to self-publish comics, not just create them.
And it is available for $4.99 at Pullbox Online. I actually bought it while we were doing the interview.
Wow.
Yeah. It was that easy.
Wow. You didn't buy it from Dark Tower Comics that hosts Around Comics every week?
They sold out.
Screw him.
No, yeah. It does sell out amazingly fast wherever they go.
If you see one, you should pay extra for it.
What was the idea behind that as far as wanting to publish a book like that? I mean, beyond, you know,
I don't know. Whenever you get a bunch of knowledge crammed in your head, you kind of want to share it. But part of it is probably also wanting to articulate it for yourself, too, maybe. I don't know.
You can go reference it yourself.
And... I knew there was a demand for it, definitely, because that's, you know, you're asked a million times. It's kind of nice to be able to say, hey, here you go. You know, check this out. I'm also a giant nerd for sort of autobiographical business books. You know, like...
Wow.
That's a niche. Boy, is that a niche.
No, I was... I'm
Billy Bean.
Since I was, like, 14, I mean, if it was an interview about someone that was... especially if they're a creative entrepreneur in anything entertainment-wise... But even other stuff, like, I read, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger's biography as a kid, because it was about the story about this guy that came from another country and
I was a bricklayer.
About Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is fantastic.
Fantastic.
It's fantastic.
I was a bricklayer with my good friend.
I noticed books are not as good once they're extremely successful, because, I read Donald Trump's Art of the Deal. I really liked that book. It's a book about a guy who's, like, 27 years old, and he's fighting with the mayor of New York City to build this hotel in the middle of town, and everyone's telling him he's crazy. And he comes from pretty well-off, you know, background to begin with, but still, it was an amazing story. And then I read that new book, How to Get Rich. I started to read the book, How to Get... What was it? I don't know what the hell. It's not the one with Robert Kiyosaki, the rich dad guy, who's writes some really good books. It was the one before that, right after The Apprentice came out. And that one's just like, here's what it's like to be a billionaire. Here's this one time.
Aren't you jealous? Rich.
This one time.
Make your first million, you know, and then I'll tell you how to make
the rest. It'll be like, he has these things like, I don't really need to sleep that much, so that really gives me an advantage, you know? Like, it's really awesome. I figure I get all these extra hours every week. I'm like, well, fucking good for you. What the hell does that have to do with helping me? I need to sleep.
Yeah, I do need to sleep.
Josh gets sleepy.
But, I mean, all those kinds of books. And I really did feel like there was a demand or a need for... a book like that, because when I was a kid reading things, there were always how to draw books and things like that. Other Chicago company guy, Tony Caputo, wrote a book on self-publishing probably 15 or so years ago, and it was really good. But the industry's changed so much at the time. There were like 13 distributors, that internet was not spoken of.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of dawned on me too. I really think, you know, I'm the only one that's published a book like that that talks about like PDF print, you know.
Well, the interesting thing,
printing and bring. I mean, and I even talk about it in my book. I'm sure, like 10 years from now, if I want to keep publishing, I'll have to change it to whenever PDFs don't exist and they use something else. You know, I mean.
Well, what I thought, you know, from this one and the one that the follow up book by Tim Seeley is that, and even in just the titles themselves, it's not. You know, I own every book I think ever produced about how to make comics, how to draw comics, how to, you know. But you guys went at it from a little bit different perspective. It wasn't just how to draw a comic book, but how to be a comic book publisher, or how to be a comic book artist, or how to self-publish a comic book, not just how to make a comic. And just from the title itself, it seemed like you were taking a different look at the actual, you know, what it takes to make these books on a day-in, day-out basis. Because everybody wants the simple answer. It's like, write a comic?
Honestly, I'm genuinely surprised, because I had my mind completely focused on the people that are going to want this. I thought there's enough people out there that want to publish their own stuff that are going to pick it up. What completely surprised me is how many people have come to me face-to-face at conventions and emailed me and said that they read the book and bought the book. and they have no intention or interest in publishing. They just wanted to read about it and see what was going on in that side of the business, and I made some jokes in it to keep them entertained enough, I guess, to read through it. So
I think sometimes creative endeavors, there's like sort of a mystery behind how you make art into business.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
like there's sort of. It's sort of interesting to read how to go about doing that.
And I do get, I've been questioned before about how it was like a little, I guess, PG-13 or whatever in the language and stuff too. And I'm like, you know what? If you're not old enough to handle that, if you're not, I don't care if you're 5 years old, if you're not mentally capable to handle that, you're not ready to publish something. So.
Yeah, you're not going to get very far.
It kind of sets the audience.
It gets more R-rated in the publishing world, I have a feeling.
And I didn't restrain Sealy on his, and I know he's a little crazier than I am too, so.
There's that whole, there's like 4 pages where he just like tells you pretty much to go fuck yourself.
We always have to have one
showdown. You're going
to
take my fucking job? Fuck you!
Fuck you.
That's, I think that's chapter 3.
I like my apartment and I'm going to stay in it forever.
Reading interviews growing up, though, the first thing they say to anyone about self-publishing is, what's your advice? They're like, don't do it!
Don't do it.
And there's no way to, you can't understand it until you're actually doing it. That's the same thing I want to say is like, my God, why would you do this to yourself?
And I think we
are you gonna, they're like, are you going to stop doing it?
I'm
no.
trapped, and I'm just doing the best I can to stay in it.
Can't you
know?
See the look in my eyes? I'm like a desperate animal.
We had that experience in New York when we were at the New York Comic Con. A younger listener of ours came up to our table and asked us, you guys have any advice about, you know, I want to start my own podcast, comic book podcast. Do you have any advice? And Chris and I kind of looked at each other, and we both wanted to say don't.
Yeah.
But we didn't, and we gave him advice, but it was just like, yeah, it's not nearly as, you know, fun as maybe it seems of being, you know, I'm sure being a comic book publisher.
Ooh,
there's so much work. There's so much work.
We have it so tough.
No, like I
wasn't talking about us.
Sound effect going, wah, wah.
I wasn't talking about us.
Or they have like a baby, they have actually a baby crying, and whenever they play a celebrity, like, yeah, we had to work on set all day long, and it was really hard. Like,
But, at least they get paid.
I
fuck
guess
them.
The other thing is, like, I would be interested later on, in, like, if going back to the whole company thing, I'd have fun writing a book about running a company, running a comic book company, but honestly, it'd really be just a book about running any company. And, but, if I was...
Dilbert's already done that, my friend. Sorry, you can't top that.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, if I do eventually want to build on something, I mean, I honestly didn't think about all this stuff when I was first starting it, but going forward, it's like, okay, if I have potential to grow that into something else about, like, to go more mainstream, you know, I have to have some kind of hook myself. So right now, if I were going to publish something, who gives a shit about who I am or what I have to say? It's going to be the people that want to self-publish comic books or they're just interested in comics. And then as that gets to be more well-known, then it helps possibly later on write something, whether it's the...
What history of DDP?
Well, kind of like it could... I'd like to write a book eventually, God knows when, but about running a business, but it's like the creative person's guide to surviving in the corporate world. Because I definitely, you know, I've always been business-minded, always kind of felt like kind of entrepreneurial and strive to, like, you know, again, as a weird little teenager reading, like, business magazines and stuff in between comics.
Business nerd. What are you doing reading Wall Street Journal, nerd?
In between, like, bitching about some, you know, listening to my friends bitch about some punk rock band selling out or something. So, but what's frustrating is, you know, I've still encountered people all the time in big corporate, you know, life who... You know, they've come about it a completely different way. You know, there really are differences when you're trying to interact with people that, you know, it's just, I can't even explain it, you know. It's like it would take a book to go into it.
Well, I think
I'll look,
you know,
for that book in the future. You can download it at Blue
Box.
Yeah,
I'd like you to, if you want to place pre-orders for 2012.
Yeah. There's a difference between, you know, coming from it from, you know, you've learned.
Good Lord.
I know, we've got Ghost of DDP's past.
Oh, God, who's here?
No. Boo.
Big, tall, Boo. Hairy people.
Oh, Jesus.
This is all about me.
Chewbacca.
It's all about me, not you.
It's, He's buying his books. Mike Norton in the house.
Mike Norton bought a pug, a little puppy pug named Ninja.
Yeah, we know all about Ninja.
Yeah, I don't know if people know, he carries it around like Paris Hilton in a little Spider-Man bag.
In his bag.
Yeah.
Good thing he doesn't leave it
it's
in his
car.
It's a
European carry-all, not a man purse. I can't believe he could fit a pug in that.
Well, guys, are we ready to wrap this one up?
I had something else, but I can't remember.
Well,
we
have a million questions. Josh, can you come back sometime? Maybe whenever.
I know it's far.
Whenever we're
done. Well,
if you
guys can book the ticket in the hotel.
Okay. Well, we'll see. It's a small hotel out back.
It's the bathroom of Dark Towers.
They
really
just asked me if I wanted to come over and have some beers, and there were four microphones here.
Do you guys do a podcast?
Oh.
Yeah. Hey, is this on? No, it's not live.
No,
just talk like we're
pretend.
Having a normal conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to...
They told
me
Mike Norton was going to be here. He's been waiting 2 hours.
The line for Norton.
You and all the 16-year-old girls out back with their copies of Runaways to get signed.
Oh,
did you hear them? Poor Mike.
Well, I think we're going to do this series of how to make comics, and we're going to get into the particulars. So maybe in a few months, whenever we're done with that, we can have you back and kind of recap a little bit.
Cool.
And hear what's
hopefully
going on.
Hopefully we'll be too busy on set while Hack Slash is filming.
That's
but,
awesome.
You know.
Hopefully.
Potato with pajamas.
Potatoes wearing underwear.
Wearing underwear.
Underwear.
You know what? 5 years from now, I want that to be all over the internet. I want people to go... Where the fuck did that idea come from?
Where
did
it go?
I have no idea.
The most pitched idea of all time.
Yeah, the next snakes on a plane. So. All right, guys. Well, I definitely want to thank Josh for hanging out with us tonight and giving us a little insight into the very complicated process of what it takes to make a comic. So, once again, we're going to have an ongoing series and focus a little bit more on the specifics of that. Let's wrap things up.
Well, one last thought.
Yes.
Underwear on a potato. Would presuppose
potatoes wearing underwear.
No, here's the thing, though. You could call it underwear and a potato, and it's often the point of view of the underwear, not the potato.
Yeah. Because that would be much more interesting.
Yeah. All right, continue.
You know what? Tater panties would sell better.
Tater panties. Now we're getting... Okay, I'm sorry.
Right, we're getting close. Another three, four cases of beer, and we got this figured out.
All right, folks, please help us spread the Around Comics love. You can do that a few
tater
different
panties,
ways.
I think it's a John Waters movie.
Tater panties.
You can download our Listener LCS Challenge flyer at aroundcomics.com. Ask your local comic shop if you will display that. You can become our virtual friends at comicspace.com.
Might be the funniest thing I've ever
or
heard.
Or myspace.com. You can do my personal favorite, leave us an iTunes music review at the iTunes Music Store. Be as cool as Andy Parks. Mike Norton.
This is just the
St. Patty's
Day warm up.
And many others.
Exactly.
You can check out all the great
every
things.
Friday
you guys
here.
Just keep going. You can check out all the great things that AroundComics.com has to offer. It's your source
when it's
for the
when
best
it's up, when it's running.
News, reviews, and opinions.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays or thereabouts on our forum at AroundComics.com. Tune in next Thursday for a conversation with the man who killed Captain America.
You sound like it's strangled
him. Son of a bitch.
You asshole.
Well, you obviously haven't been to some of the forums. That's right. We've got Ed Brubaker next week. So.
But we're not talking about Cap at all.
No, not.
That was
it's
the
all
agreement.
Criminal.
It's all criminal. No
you know
Cap.
What? I'll
it's
just go. I'll risk the, you know, the comment. I'll risk the consequences and say, when Superman died, big deal. But who the fuck thought anyone would give a crap about Captain America dying in the mainstream press? When it comes to, like,
I was a little surprised.
CNN and all that stuff.
Dude.
Because
I was a little surprised.
Spider-Man dying?
Spider-Man
sure. Dying, huge
even
deal.
Batman, because
huge
all the
deal.
Movies,
Batman,
the TV
yeah.
show. But Cap, I was a little shocked at how many, how much of a response
what,
it got.
You guys all,
I love
Cap.
Cap's
freedom.
One of my favorite. Shut
someone
up.
Loves
well, I
that might be part
of it,
though.
Of
it honestly,
is
the
is
time of the country.
Well, I do hate evil.
Charged media.
Do you hate evil, Josh?
Are you sure?
Devils do
are you sure?
Hates
the worst
evil.
Kind of terror is evil terror.
Thanks again to Borders. Borders has thousands of manga and graphic novels.
See
in fact,
right
you'll find that. Exactly what you are looking for and discover unexpected new authors and series simply by visiting Borders. Save on your favorite graphic novels, manga, and more. Click on the Borders banner at the Around Comics website for a 20% off coupon. Check Borders first. Find a store near you at www.borderstores.com or use the Borders store locator at aroundcomics.com.
Nothing screams America like supporting the Hero Initiative.
Be a hero. Be an American hero.
Yeah. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give something back to the people who have given us so much enjoyment.
For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and tell them Tom told you to call.
and get a free
tote bag.
Well, once again, I would like to thank everyone for joining us today, Josh. It was a pleasure. Thanks to Mark at Dark Tower for hosting us, like he does every Friday. And the pizza. The pizza was actually very good this week.
I don't know.
No? I liked it.
Okay.
Had cheese and sauce and crust.
It wasn't horrible. I ate it,
it was
obviously.
Better than St. Louis.
That makes good. That makes good pizza.
All right, everyone.
Pro Bell.
Everyone have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around.
Comics.
Self-publishing.
If you'd like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, babe. Yeah.